I've met a lot of bankers over the past 43 years, and David Kirstein certainly is near the top of that list. I met David when he was at Old Kent Bank in Michigan, one of the great institutions of banking. But David's also got some expertise at Citi and Bank One. And in 1998, when he left banking, he founded Peak Performance Consulting Group. Peak Performance Consulting focuses on retail strategies, and it could be anywhere from branching, mobile banking, call center, you name it. David travels all around the country, does a ton of programs every single year, webinars. He's very active in blogging and writing, does a lot of work in BAI banking strategies. You may have seen him there. So they work, Peak Performance Consulting works with a lot of our clients, community banks and large banks as well, helping them with their retail strategies. And we all know that retail is an absolutely critical area. And everybody's wondering, is there going to be a branch tomorrow? What about ITMs, cash dispensers? David and I recorded a really interesting 10 minutes with that turned out to be a lot longer than that, but you'll enjoy it because there's a lot of excellent give and take. And David talks about five things that he believes are going to really occur in 2018, and then we'll come back later on in the year and talk a little bit about what happened. So enjoy your 10 minutes with Dave Kirstein. You'll really enjoy this one.
Well, thank you, Jack, and thank you for arranging these podcasts. This is great value that you're providing to the industry, and I really appreciate your inviting me to participate today. You know, it's the start of a new year, so there's this annual ritual of predicting what is 2018, and it's kind of hard to believe we're already in 2018, the new year going to look like. And I have five thoughts that I'd like to talk with you about today. And so this is going to make it really easy for those of you who are wondering, where is he going on this? When we get to when I'm number three, then you'll know, well, there's only two more to go. So I'm going to kind of lead off with talking about our thoughts about where the industry's been, some of the issues that are really facing the industry as we go forward, and some of the real focus for 2018. You know, it's been a really good year for the industry. The economy has been strong, margins have been improving, but there's been some pressure and will continue to be some pressure raising deposit rates because many of the clients that we've been working with are at high loan to deposit ratios as they've been in a good position to make loans and now starting to feel the pressure about do we have enough deposits to continue that that trend. We also think that banks have kind of overcome their fear of fintechs, really not seeing the type of competition that we feared might occur there, and are looking at more partnerships and ability to align with them to get some of the unique value that they provide and be able to deliver it to our customers. And finally, I would say that branch transformation has really been something that has been on the front burner, but is no longer viewed as a crisis that needs revolutionary change, but rather something that we're all evolving with and figuring out how do we move forward in a paced way to be able to solve these problems for the future where customers are using our branches differently than they have before. And we're adjusting to, on the one hand, they need the value from branches, that it still is one of the key decision points in terms of how do I select a bank, or where do I deepen my relationship with based on do they have some physical convenience, some branch distribution that I can use. So that kind of what are we looking at in terms of what do we see the crystal ball for 2018? Well, here's our top five picks. Number one, let's talk about the branch. The branch of the future is here, and it's still a branch. I think that the predictions that branches are going to go away, that there'll only be half as many in 5 years or 10 years, I think are, well, lunacy is probably the best way to describe it. Banks and credit unions are still opening about 1,000 new branches a year, even though the number, total number, may be declining slightly. All that decline is from the largest banks that have really deep distribution in larger urban areas, where they're cutting back some of the branches that they have and consolidating them. But in the meanwhile, community banks and credit unions are expanding, and they're responsible for the majority of new branch growth. And I think one thing is clear: customers still want that convenience of physical location. There's countless surveys show that branch convenience is the number one criteria for selecting a financial institution. And data that Bank of America and Chase have publicly disclosed show that, contrary to popular wisdom, millennials use branches about the same frequency as the average branch customer. So while some of this may change in the future, for now, at least for the foreseeable future, 85% or so of all new accounts are opened in branches, not online, and we expect that to continue. So we need to be in a position to serve our customers effectively. So the second point I want to make is it's really all about the customer experience. Customers have a choice. They know that almost everything that, that can be done in a branch could be done through other channels. They could call the call center, or do it on their computer, or do it with their smartphone or on an advanced function ATM. But when they visit a branch, they're making a choice for some type of human interaction. They don't want to come into the branch to be told, use our self-service terminal and do it yourself. But rather, they want a personal experience that they can't get from home. So I'm not suggesting that there's not a role for self-service in some locations or as a strategy for some banks. But rather, be careful. If you believe that self-service is the new normal, then why do you need branches at all? Rather, banks are paying greater attention to the what I describe as the choreography, if you will, of the branch experience. How people are handled, what people do, and what that social interaction is with customers, and how they then integrate it between digital and their call center. And so in that regard, here's my third point. The universal banker is the new standard. With declining branch traffic, higher staffing models and branches must change. You know, when we've done a lot of analysis around this, and we found that about 50 to 60% of bank branches are staffed at higher levels than are required just for customer traffic. So when you look at security, dual control, standard staffing protocols, those are driving the number of staff. That C branches are staffed the minimum for operational or internal procedures, not the number that's required if you solely look at, well, how many customers are arriving on a daily or weekly basis. And that's economically unsustainable. The number of monetary transactions that occur in bank branches, bank and credit union branches, is declining every year. And if we have a large number of branches that are already staffed higher than the number that we need solely for customers today, then it's only going to get worse. And it also implies that we don't have the right mix of people at any given point in time, because we've got such a small number of people staffing the branch for and focused on various operational and internal considerations, there's not enough for to handle customer needs as they come in. So many financial institutions have been experimenting with this universal model, but we see them struggling to get it right. Too often, it's just simply cross-training staff to handle other functions, but not really changing the cadence of way the branches operate. And often that means that people are cross-trained, but then they revert to the familiar roles that they already always did. So getting it right requires rethinking the way that the branch operates, not as a collection of individuals with specific defined roles like teller or customer service representative or personal banker, but rather as a team of players that can perform all the functions in the branch. And they become a group of utility players with the branch manager functioning as a coach for all of them. To make that happen, technology is going to be important. And that's my fourth point I'd like to make. Technology is about facilitating improved personal service, not driving self-service. So sure, there's a place for ITMs or other similar technology, but it's far from proven. Today, ITMs require, they can do a lot of things. They can do 80 to 90% of what can often be done in a bank branch. But they also require a half to one FTE per machine in a call center. So it kind of begs the question about the economic viability. If you can't reduce staff, despite this significant capital outlay, then where's the benefit, and where's the benefit to the customer experience? And I'd also say that attempts to turn ATMs into mini branches through video link have had mixed results. So for example, we've seen some larger institutions that have spent years experimenting with how could they automate their drive up to hear continued feedback from customers who say, you know, if I wanted to do it after all this way drive up, it was so much easier to just put it in the pneumatic tube. And so where's the benefit to the customer experience? So the payoff from branch technology is when it makes it easier for your staff to serve customers. I'd encourage you to look more closely at cash recyclers, especially when used in pods or open teller lines. They can improve security and staff utilization and make it easier to have interaction with customer. I'd also encourage looking at simplification and automation of operating procedures to move non-customer activities out of branches. And there's always that residual that you know is just there because it's been there over time. And so you can allow the staff to focus on sales, service, and marketing. And there's been a lot of talk in the industry about artificial intelligence, and really should think about this as augmented intelligence, if you will, to not replace human decision-making, but rather to enhance it in order to make a better customer experience and make it easier for the small number of staff that you have in your branches to provide that full service, personal customer experience for your customers. And then the last thing I'd like to touch on is an emphasis on small business. We're seeing a resurgence of institutions focusing on small business because it's an underserved area. It's an area where banks have historically had kind of mixed feelings about how they implement this. We've got lenders who focus on lending, and then we've got at the same time about 60% of small businesses who are not borrowers. And how do they get served? They're the ones who are using branches. They're the ones who have deposit relationships, and they're the ones who have high balance relationships and have the potential for deeper relationships with the bank, both on a business and on a personal basis, because their owners tend to be more affluent than the general population. So having our branch staff be in a better position to focus on the borrowing needs, the personal needs, and deepening relationships with small businesses is particularly important, especially now that we've got high loan to deposit ratios and that small businesses are a great source for increased deposits. So we see that financial institutions are going to pull back from making more dramatic changes and take a more practical approach to the industry's challenges, such as service delivery and channel utilization, with 2018 being the year where they really focus on small business banking, with perhaps enhanced by some increased investment in technology and training, and to simplify business loan processing, and using branch staff to have a greater role in providing those services. So there are our five predictions. How accurate are our predictions going to be? Well, we'll keep our eye on that crystal ball that falls each year in Times Square. And next year, I look forward in December or January to recapping with you, Jack, to say the year. What were the key trends in 2018? We're already there. And what are the year like, and how accurate are our predictions? So thank you, Jack. Thanks for having us.
Well, David, you add so much. And as I said in my introduction to your program, whenever I think of retail banking, you're the first person I call. And you're the first person that a lot of people call in the industry based on your experience and all the wonderful people and things like that. If you've got a minute, you've surfaced a couple of things, and you may not know totally the answers to this. But one of the things I've always been impressed with about working with you is you're a very how-driven person. There's a lot of folks out there who can give a lot of theory, but you get down in the weeds and the trenches with people. And when you talk about deposits, it's so interesting how people have called me, or I hear or read things in the newspaper, on podcasts, and bank representatives or consultants will say, "Well, we need more deposits." Well, that all sounds really good in theory. What are some of your clients doing to recognizing that we do need deposits? What are they doing to go get them?
Well, that's a great point. A couple of things that I'd encourage, Jack. One of them is, as I mentioned ago, a lot more focus on small business. We find that small business is, and I'm sure you've run into this with your clients, that small business tends to be underserved because the lenders focus on lending, and the branches generally do not focus specifically on small business. Sure, they service those customers who are coming in, but they don't have generally the skills to be able to handle small business loans, and in many cases, they are held back from even opening accounts. We find many clients where, because of the complexities of, for example, account opening around S-corps or LLCs or others and the documentation required, they're not trained to handle that. And so those types of decisions tend to get kicked up to the branch manager, who at the same time is being sent out to make community calling and to go out and do prospecting. So there hasn't been a structure at most banks around how our small businesses handled. And as I said, they're underserved, and they tend to bring in larger personal deposits and larger business deposits. That's one. And the second is taking a more structured marketing approach to business development around branches. So, you know, when you think about it, your branches serve a pretty much a defined population. They are convenient to either people who live or owns or work within a convenient area around that branch, and that's knowable. We can know every business. We can know every household that is within that area. After all, just like in our own personal behavior, we know that there's a limited distance that we'll go for routine types of activities that we do. We're not going to drive half an hour to go do our banking. We might drive 5 minutes, maybe it's 10 minutes, but there's a defined area that we can draw from. And those institutions that have gotten it right have tended to think, first of all, where's my target? Who are they? Who are the people who are most likely to do business with us? And to have branch-related and marketing-related activities that focus specifically on them. So, and to utilize their branch staff to be able to enhance that marketing. It's one of the benefits that we've seen in Universal Banker. We've seen institutions that have done this well that now have everybody in their branch who is engaged in some type of outreach to either onboarding customers, to outreach to marketing, outreach to hosting events, not just something that falls on the FSR, but something that everybody does. In contrast to what we've historically done, where tellers don't engage in those types of activities. And so half or more of your staff is not functioning, is not actively engaged in ongoing prospecting and sales efforts, but rather is stuck in very traditional roles in terms of monetary transactions, which are continuing to decline. So, Jack, I rambled a little bit there on multiple points, but I hope that gives some insight to some of the strategies that we've seen that are successful.
Well, you know, and I always say to people, in 17, and I'm going to talk about it in my 10 minutes when I tape it myself. But in 17, we did a program with a bank that we had about 120 branch managers over a couple of different time periods make calls on current clients. They didn't really much in outside selling, and they're afraid to go out. And so why not start with our current clients? And so the goal of the bank was to uncover one new opportunity per branch manager, which was about 120. Just by going out, having good preparation, asking the right questions, not pushing a product, not bringing a brochure, just by being trust-based and asking the right questions, they uncovered over 500 opportunities. And what was really shocking about that is it's current clients. And they believe, and the bank believed, and I think a lot of banks believe, that we've got everything we have, we're going to get from our current clients, we got to go prospect. And I think if more banks focused in 2018 on their current clients, getting deeper and wider, and we call it cross-solving, I think that the deposits wouldn't be an issue and the competition would be an issue because we'd be the competition and they'd be worrying about us. One more quick question. You online account opening, and that's happening more and more and more. I'm curious because you also talked about the importance the human touch in this. And so you look at all these articles, the financial brand and Jim Morris and you and everybody else that writes great articles on retail banking, and you talk about the technology and then juxtapose that against human touch, that seems conflicting. So my question to you is, when you have a client that does a lot of good work in account opening, that 15% of the accounts that you talked about that could be opened online, when does the human being come in to start talking to that customer, and who in your experience has been that person that reaches out to the customer and says, hey, I see you open an account online. Hey, thanks for banking with us. I'm Fred. I'm going to be your account manager. Are you seeing that going on in banking at all?
Yes. Well, seeing people starting to experiment with that. And to your point, I think that there certainly is some percentage of the population that feels comfortable in just dealing with banks, with financial institutions remotely. It tends to be roughly 10-15% of the population. Certainly some of this is product related. I think that there are certain products that we know, credit cards as an example. Mortgages, when you look at what Quicken has done with Rocket Mortgage, that people are comfortable with opening an account online. And not only has historically those have been, that's not something new, but, you know, I don't mean to sound glib about this, but people feel more comfortable if the bank is giving them money to apply for it online. But when they're giving the bank their money, they're a little bit more concerned about that. So the tendency for new account opening has been for deepening relationships. I've got a checking account, I'll open a savings account online, or I'll transfer money into a new savings account. It has generally not been for the first relationship. So one of the things that we've seen that some banks are experimenting with is, one, as you said, Jack, having someone from the branch contact customers or be a point of contact to assist with account opening. Umpqua Bank on the West Coast in Portland, Oregon, has been experimenting with just that type of technology, where they have created an actual personal banker who is tied to that customer and can be reached both virtually and physically, so that they tie that digital relationship back to an individual. Other banks that we've seen, Frost Bank is one that I point out in San Antonio, Texas, that has enhanced their call center capability to be, in effect, a virtual branch, so that when somebody is interacting with them, they don't get a chat bot, but they get a person. And they get a person who is there at extended hours, I believe now 24 hours a day, that is available to talk with them and actually can help them through that process and answer the questions that they have. And I'd use an example. I want to give you two examples that are personal that I find enlightening. One is on the remote access or digital access and how people perceive it. I have two of our four children. They're adults. They're millennials. They're the perfect people. They travel in their jobs a great deal, and they're the perfect people who you might say, well, they're the ones who, you know, they don't want a bank branch. They're the ones who just want to go and do everything online. And they do, except that with their online bank account, they've never given up their physical bank account. So one of them, who I just saw over the holidays, was telling me, you know, I do my primary checking with USAA, but I still have my bank account locally because there's times that I need to go to the bank and I need to see someone. So there's, on the one hand, I think, an opportunity for banks to think about, we need to tie this together to provide the kind of remote services and digital services that that our customers are asking for, but so they don't think I have to go to somebody like a USAA or an Ally Bank or whatever, because people aren't ready to cut that cord yet. And maybe someday they will in the future, but they're not ready to cut that cord yet. The other is just even on my own. Charles Schwab opened an office in my suburb of Austin, Texas. And I have to tell you, well, first of all, you know, it's kind of counterintuitive, isn't it? Why is Charles Schwab opening more offices at a time when everybody is saying, we don't need as many offices? Why do people need branches? And yet, it's not that they have a lot of them here, but they're expanding those because of that need for customer service. And I have to tell you that when it came up for our small company's annual retirement contribution, our SEP program, I could have done it online. I could have done it through Schwab's call center, but I went to my local branch because I wanted to sit and convey somebody and have them help me through the complex questions that I wanted to make sure I got it right. And it was more comfortable for me to actually look somebody in the eye and have them go through the paperwork with me, even though I knew that that could have all been handled online. So I think we've got to find that right balance. It's not, yes, the technology is getting better, and I think that greater account opening will occur in the future online. Today, it's at maybe 10%. Some people are talking about 15%. But I think, again, that tends to be more deepening of relationships that are already established rather than establishing new relationships with customers, because that's a point where people need that personal interaction greater rather than just saying, I'm adding on another account. Or like in my case, what I was describing, I've already got a relationship with an investment house and I want to add another product, but I already have that relationship with them.
Well, I think you can all see that if you need some help with retail banking, whether it's the call center, the branches, small business structure, Dave Kirstein is the guy to talk to, and you've had a snippet of this, but if you want to hear more, Dave's got a great newsletter. You put this out every week, don't you, David? Tell us a little bit about that.
Every other week, it's called Retail Banking Strategies, and we publish insight on the latest trend in the industry, some of the things that we're seeing from our clients, and reference back to, we regularly publish articles on BAI banking strategies and on the financial brand, and we'll often reference back to those as well. So I hope that those of you who have not subscribed will sign up, and we hope you'll find it of value.
Hey, David, thanks a lot. Thanks for taking some of your time. And to your point, because it's recorded, we'll be able to go back in August, September, October, and see how some of your predictions are going to come true. But I think a lot of them will. Thanks a lot for being with us, David.
Thank you, Jack.
Well, as you can see, Dave Kirstein is a man of much knowledge, and if you have interest in working with Dave or talking with Dave, here's a guy that really lives his message of trusted advisor and trust-based selling. Just by calling him, he'll give you a lot of information, and he's not going to send you an invoice or try to sell you anything or twist your arm. And if you want to get a hold of him, here's a couple ways to do it. Dave's down in Austin, Texas. He moved away from Grand Rapids, Michigan when he left banking, moved down to Austin. And he talks about how over the Christmas holidays, he came back up to Chicago to see one of his kids, and he froze to death. It was tough. So Dave's down in Austin, Texas, and he can be reached at 512-607-6332. And if you want to email David, or sign up for his newsletter and blog, which are fabulous, D. Kirstein, K-E-R-S-T-E-I-N, at ppcgroup.com. Hey, David, thanks for taking 10 minutes with us.